Here we're back again. We spent the entire last show talking about the intro of skin health. We've got a lot more information to go through. Maybe we get through it today. Maybe we don't. Not really sure. We'll just kind of play it by ear and see what happens. But with me, as always, is Aaron.
Hi.
Quick on the draw out there, saying hi back at us. Before we go too far, I'll talk just briefly about last week's episode. So we were talking about how, you know, we got this topic because we got lots and lots and lots of questions and comments regarding skin health. People, you know, saying, hey, I've got this skin issue or this skin, that skin issue. You know, I've got this, that going on. What can I do? Is there anything that I can do to help? What can, you know, so on and so forth. Tons of different types of questions like that. Both, you know, Facebook messages, emails, some phone calls here and there. Lots of patients come in, you know, as a side note, they come in, they've got, oh, I've got all this fatigue. But then we talk about anything else. And a lot of times, yeah, I've got this stuff on my face or I've got this stuff on my arm or my leg. And I'm trying to figure out what this is. And, you know, we do our best to try and help with that, to identify that. So we talked about how, you know, gut health is imperative if you're going to have good skin health, and how if your gut is not healthy and functioning well, your skin will not be healthy and will not look right. We talked a little bit about probiotics and how they can be beneficial but may not be the end-all, be-all answer to all of your issues. And then we rattled off a bunch of nutrients that are important for skin health. We rattled off and we discussed vitamin A at the end of the last show. So go back and make sure and check that out so you can hear all about vitamin A. But then we have zinc, vitamin C, omega-3 fatty acids, biotin, selenium, silica, niacin, vitamin K2. We're going to come back and talk about probiotics and gut health just a little bit. Sulfur, vitamin E, and then pantothenic acid. So like I said, last show we talked about vitamin A and how, you know, it's generally universally known that vitamin A is very helpful for skin issues, and being deficient in it can create, problems with skin health. But next on the list is zinc. So zinc is a mineral. It's very, very important part of a lot of different physiological functions. Things like structure of certain proteins and enzymes, and it can help regulate gene expression. It plays a massive role in immune function, plays a big role in protein synthesis, our body's ability to make and manufacture proteins. It's very important for wound healing, DNA synthesis, so our body's ability to make our own genetic map, our own DNA. We make that stuff on a regular basis. Having enough zinc to be able to make sure that we do that. And then cell division. Cell division is huge. We want our cells to be able to split and divide and make more healthy cells. But in the skin, what zinc does is it helps the proper structure of proteins and cell membranes. It improves wound healing, which is part of that immune function. It has anti-inflammatory effects, and it helps protect us against UV radiation. So UV radiation is that stuff that you get exposed to when you go out and you have sun shining, you know, directly on your face.
Right. Well, and several studies indicate dietary zinc could reduce acne as effectively as antibiotics like tetracyclines, which is huge.
Yes. We, at the Institute, I like zinc. I use zinc for a lot of different things. Zinc is a mineral. Just by default, minerals are extremely difficult for humans to absorb. We don't do a very good job of getting them in our diet. And then when we do, our bodies don't do a very good job of absorbing them. Zinc is actually great. It's something that can be added as an additional nutrient to a lot of different IV nutritional formulas. And we use that a lot. It's just extremely extremely important. Zinc is one of those things I take every single day. I have a lot of stuff that I take, you know, sporadically here and there. Oh, I'll take this, I'll take that, I'll take something else. But zinc is one of those, it's a daily staple, that I make sure to get plenty of.
Well, and zinc supplementation is shown to significantly increase the level of vitamin A in the blood.
Right. So,
I know we talked about vitamin A last week.
That's exactly right. So when a lot of these things interact, and I think that that's where a lot of, you know, doctors and health practitioners' education falls short, is knowing what interacts with what and what helps build up, you know, certain things. So, you know, if someone's taking a super high dose of vitamin A for a very short period of time, and they're loading up on zinc, they may be doing themselves a disservice. That can be problematic, because it interacts with this and helps it become more effective. So I like to use zinc a lot, to where I don't have to use lots and lots of vitamin A. Because like I said on the last show last week, vitamin A, if you take a lot of it, it really makes your liver mad. And you can have some liver issues from that. Plus, if you get too much vitamin A, your hands and your feet turn orange, and nobody wants hands and orange feet.
No,
I don't anyway. So the fact that zinc has been studied, and they figured out that it can reduce acne. There are some that think that, you know, that it can reduce. There are some studies out there that say that zinc is as effective as tetracycline antibiotics at reducing acne. That's huge. I mean, if you can take an antibiotic out of someone to, you know, help them get rid of acne and give them a mineral that has so many positive functions in the body, that is just massive. I'm a big fan. The reason that we think that this works is that zinc interacts with vitamin A as a piece of a retinol binding protein, and that's what's necessary for moving vitamin A in the blood. So these two nutrients work together, zinc and vitamin A. There's stuff out there. Men and women with serious acne have lower levels of serum zinc than people that have healthy controls. So when you look at the studies, when they compare, okay, well, we've got these two groups of people. We have a control group that is quote unquote healthy. And then we have our experimental group that has, lower levels of zinc, that's what they're doing when they're comparing these types of things. So zinc in our diet, it's best absorbed if you get it from an animal source. It's very difficult for vegans and vegetarians to get enough zinc. If it's in zinc, it's not bound to phytates like it is in plant sources. There's a lot of things that I'm not a huge fan of, you know, consuming massive amounts of plant-based stuff. And, you know, I know that some people do it and that it works great for them. But for others, it's really, really hard to get enough nutrients because they're just not as bioavailable in a plant source as they are in an animal source. And zinc is one of those.
Right, and we're not against plant-based, diets in general. We're not against eating plants, but it just, there are some nutrients that are just so much easier to get from animal sources.
Yeah, way easier, and that's one of those is zinc. So organ foods like kidneys and liver have quite a bit of zinc in them. Red meat, things like beef and lamb. Seafood, oysters, scallops, shellfish are pretty much the highest animal sources of zinc. Obviously people with shellfish allergies have to be careful with that. Plant foods that have relatively high levels of zinc would be things like pumpkin seeds. They have quite a bit of zinc, but remember, they're bound to these phytates, and that just decreases the bioavailability of the mineral itself. And so you're less likely to assimilate, absorb this thing if it's coming from from plant-based. So if you're wanting to get the absolute most zinc that you can from your diet, it basically comes from shellfish. That's where the most is. If you can get it from organ meats as well, and red meat, that's where you're going to get the most amount of zinc. Do you think we talked about zinc enough?
Yeah, I think we're good on zinc. Let's move on.
We loaded up. All right. Zinc's important. I like it a lot. The next one is one I like maybe even more than
zinc.
So get ready. The next one that we're going to talk about is vitamin C. Now, we do have to take a break. So when we come back, we're going to dive into vitamin C. And I apologize. Vitamin C may take an entire segment itself. I'm going to do my best to
try to rein you in, to
limit the amount of information we throw out there about vitamin C, because there's just so much benefit to vitamin C. Humans don't make it. We have to get it from outside sources. And so we've got to make sure that we're getting plenty of vitamin C in our diet. So when we come back, we're going to dive headfirst into vitamin C and how it's important for skin health. You're listening to Wellness 101. Before the break, we were talking about zinc. Today, we're talking about skin health and nutrients that can help with skin health. And we talked about zinc and learned lots and lots about zinc. And then I said I would do my best. And this next one that we're going to talk about is vitamin C. And although I could go on for days about vitamin C, I'll keep it brief to keep us moving along. So vitamin C is extremely important. It's been known for a long time that it helps regulate protein collagen, which is it for skin purposes. It has to do with the extracellular stability of the skin. So it's how our skin looks, how our skin heals, how our skin feels. If we don't have enough vitamin C, if we're deficient in it, we get this condition called scurvy, which first manifests itself as rough, dry skin and corkscrew hair growth. So your hair looks all funky. Not getting enough vitamin C can contribute to this hyperkeratosis pilaris, and we talked about that last week. And Aaron very kindly pointed out that a lot of people have this. A lot of people know what this is.
Yeah.
And so the follicles get damaged with that. So getting more vitamin C in the diet contributes to improved skin health. It also helps us heal faster. So like I said before the break, humans don't make vitamin C. Most all other mammals, not quite, but almost all other mammals manufacture their own vitamin C. And in times of sickness and stress, they can increase production many, many thousandfold. They can make a ton of it. And humans can't. We're missing an enzyme. And so we have to get it from our diet. And we have to have quite a bit of it on a regular basis. So think about that the next time you realize, oh, wait, I haven't had any vitamin C in months, because most of us just don't consume vitamin C. So there are a lot of studies out there. Some observational studies that have been done show that diets that have high levels of vitamin C, people have better skin appearances and less skin wrinkling. Which I think a lot of people would love to have less wrinkles.
Right. And that's vitamin C is a huge component in a lot of the IVs that we do in the clinic.
Yeah.
And that is one of the, big reasons we think why people come back so often saying, my skin has improved dramatically.
Yeah. My skin looks better. It feels better. Can you believe this?
Yeah.
And we're like, yes, we can. And we're very glad that you're noticing the benefits as well. Vitamin C can help. It may help prevent ultraviolet induced damage because it acts as an antioxidant. High intakes of vitamin C are correlated with a decreased level of dry skin. So this is very interesting. When people come into the office and they're like, "Yeah, I have dry skin," I'm like, "Well, you need vitamin C." They're like, "Wait, what do you mean vitamin C?" I'm like, "Yeah, you need vitamin C," and they want to argue and say, "No, I need." Fish oils or omegas. And I'm like, well, I'm not saying that you don't, but
we talk about those next.
Exactly. I promise you need vitamin C, and because you're not getting enough of it. And, getting enough vitamin C in people, and they realize, wow, I don't have to use lotion anymore. My skin's not dry anymore. It's mind blowing that that could possibly happen for them. So that helps. because the mechanism they believe is that ascorbic acid has effects on epidermal water loss. So it's able to like keep this stuff in your body a little more if you have plenty of vitamin C, which makes sense because you're plumping up the fibers that make up the skin. You're plumping up that collagen. It's very important. Vitamin C is very important for wound healing. And the formation of strong scar tissue. You want scar tissue to be strong and healthy. And because sometimes people's scar tissue is just pitiful, weak little stuff that just, it's just awful. If they get plenty more vitamin C in their body, they would lay down, better scar tissue. And now while an absolute true deficiency of vitamin C, especially in the United States, is extremely uncommon, it's very, very common to be consuming suboptimal levels, not getting enough for day-to-day activities, especially if your diet is very limited in fruits and vegetables.
And unfortunately, that's the standard American diet. Most
right.
people are not getting enough fruits and vegetables.
Right. So places where we get lots of vitamin C in our diet, bell peppers, dark leafy greens, guava, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kiwi, citrus fruits, strawberries. Some herbs have relatively high levels of vitamin C. Cilantro, chives, thyme. You know, you're not going to consume enough cilantro to get your daily needs for, you know, optimal health of vitamin C. If you are, no one's going to want to be in the room with you because that's going to be some strong smelling breath you're going to have. But you got to get it from, you know, got to get plenty in your diet.
Right. Basil and parsley also have high levels of vitamin C.
They do. Basil and parsley do. So as far as like diet goes, if you get a wide, colorful, plant-based diet and foods, that is your best way to get higher levels of vitamin C. Is it going to be optimal? Maybe not, but is it at least going to give you some vitamin C to work with? Yes.
Right. I also want to point out that it's that vitamin C is sensitive to heat.
Right. So these things need to be consumed raw.
Raw or very lightly cooked.
Very lightly.
Yeah.
Like steamed for a second and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it.
So So if you're cooking them for any significant time, you're going to destroy the vitamin C.
Yep. That's exactly right. Next on the list is omega-3s. We just kind of mentioned omega-3s a second ago. Omega-3s are very anti-inflammatory, and how we consume omega-3s relative to omega-6s is kind of a big deal when it comes to inflammation and inflammatory response. So the modern diet, the standard American diet, is typically very high in omega-6s compared to omega-3s, to the tune of 20 to 1 ratio. We really want a 6 to 3 ratio, you know, at least get yourself down to 4 to 1. And, you know, in a perfect world, we're sitting at 1 to 1. And as people progress and see improvements, we see that it's much easier for them to shift to a more 1 to 1 ratio. Because omega-6s, they aren't, while they're not, you know, I don't, everybody wants to say, oh, omega-6s are bad. No, they're not. You have to have them. But having way too much of them is a problem. And that's what makes them bad, is when you have 50 times more omega-6s than you have omega-3s, you've got issues. You're going to be inflamed. You're going to have all the complications that come with being just flat out systemically inflamed. So we want to get this ratio down, to a more manageable, you know, 4 to 1, 2 to 1, 1 to 1 type of ratio. So omega-3s in our diet help us heal our skin. High levels of omega-3s decrease inflammation. Like I said, they decrease the risk of acne and other skin problems because they decrease this stuff called insulin-like growth factor, IGF-1. That's a big deal. IGF-1, we didn't get into it. It goes back into some probiotics and stuff. IGF-1 is permeable in the colon. And so this stuff can be kind of bad news for us and create some issues. Clinical results by taking omega-3s, people will have improved skin condition just overall. They'll have decreased in scaling and redness. Those are big ones as well, especially if someone is suffering from psoriasis or eczema. A lot of people are complaining of scaly red skin, and it may even be oozing a little bit, and that'll decrease as well. And then omega-3s, there's a lot of studies that even show that they decrease inflammation in the skin caused by UV radiation, and omega-3s themselves may actually reduce the risk of developing skin cancer. So that's a big plus for getting omega-3s.
Right, and that research is part of the reason why omega-3s have been pushed more recently. Like once we found that out that, hey, this is, you know,
right.
Not only will it improve the look of your skin, but can also
protect your skin
from, you know, things, various things, including skin cancer, which is huge.
Yeah. So getting foods that are high in omega-3s, likely we're going to help you have smoother, younger, healthier looking skin. There's going to be visible reduction in, you know, skin conditions like acne and psoriasis. But these types of fats, I mean, you're predominantly going to find them in very cold water, very fatty fish. Now, cold water fish are fish that are below, there's a temperature. I'm pulling it off the top of my head. I want to say cold water is anything below 40 or 50 degrees. So the temperature of that water is really, really cold. And then anything above that is considered a warm water fish. I could be off. Don't hold me quite to that, but it's something close to that. So these are, you know, deep water, cold fish, very high in fats. The fish oils are basically like antifreeze for the fish because oil, it doesn't freeze at the same temperature that water does. And so these fish are cold water fish are going to have more of these oils and fats in them. That's why they have so much
right.
in there.
It's
protective for them.
And there are a lot of different fishes that fall into that category, but just some that.
Did you say fishes?
Maybe. Thanks for pointing it out.
I'm pretty sure she said fishes.
sardine, salmon, mackerel, tuna, anchovies, black cod are just a few that are commonly consumed.
Yeah, we have a. I won't call him out on the office or on the air, but we have an office culprit who loves to bring in anchovies and sardines and salmon and eat that at the office. And yeah, it stinks. So, you know, take that into consideration if you're going to take this stuff to work to eat. Be kind to your fellow workers. Not all of them want to smell your fishy food that you're eating for lunch, even though it's extremely healthy and beneficial for you. But another reason that you might want to eat fish rather than just take the fish oils is that there are a lot of other nutrients that are in the fish, like vitamin D and selenium. They're inside the fish, and if you're just taking a fish oil, you're that stuff's not going to be there unless the fish oil had the vitamin D added to it. And it may. There are some products out there that may have that. And then, you know, avoiding, you know, our industrial seed oils, canola oil, corn oil, stuff like that, they're very high in omega-6 fatty acids, which, you know, are very inflammatory for the system. So, all right, we've got to take a break. I just got the little, hey, you got to take a break signal. When we come back, we're going to continue on with some nutrients that are important for skin health. You're listening to Wellness 101. Here we are in part two of skin health, and we're going through talking about individual nutrients and like what they do and why they're important for skin health. Last week we talked about vitamin A, and then so far this week we've talked about zinc, vitamin C, and omega-3 fatty acids. Aaron's like, okay, yep, we are. It's all you. Next on the list is biotin. Biotin is a water-soluble vitamin. It's one of our B vitamins. It's it's a cofactor for enzymes that regulate fatty acid metabolism. So it's how we break down fatty acids. And any vitamin that says it's a cofactor, most of our B vitamins are cofactors, meaning they help do other things, right? So with this fatty acid metabolism, if we have good, proper fat production, we will have healthy skin. It's a critical component. If we don't, we're going to have a problem. Skin cells are very rapidly turned over. They're replaced very quickly. I mean, you have new skin cells in your gut every 24 hours. I mean, they're just turned over very, very quickly. Now, that doesn't mean that they're healthy when they get turned over and get new ones. It just means that that's how quickly you're making them. Because these cells are also in contact with our external environment. So, you know, you look down at your skin, it's what's protecting you from the outside world. And when we have fatty acids in our skin, they protect against damage to our skin and they protect against water loss. So if we don't get enough biotin in our bodies, our fat production, how we make this stuff, changes. And not for the better. And what's crazy is the skin cells are some of the first to develop actual symptoms. And if you go to, you know, your local health food store or whatever, and you pick up like some sort of hair, skin, nail product, a lot of them are just called hair, skin, nails or something like that. You look on the back of that and all of them will have biotin as an ingredient.
Right. And that's why most people have heard of biotin. It's only in connection to, you know, the health of hair, skin, and nails. Usually that's when it's brought up. And that's
right.
Why it's typically pushed by, if a dermatologist is going to recommend a supplement, it's probably going to be biotin.
Yep. Without a doubt. Maybe a fish oil.
Yeah.
Maybe. And a probiotic. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. So if we're deficient in biotin, it causes hair loss, and the hair loss is scaly. It's red and it's inflamed. It's kind of nasty looking. Unfortunately, it just people that have this problem, they know they have the problem. They don't need anyone to point it out for them, and it's really frustrating for them.
Well, and you can get that not only on your scalp, but it can also appear like around your mouth and on your face. I mean,
yeah.
A biotin deficiency is, I mean, it can cause a very visible difference in your skin.
Yeah, yeah. And so if we've got an infant, biotin deficiency, it oftentimes manifests itself as cradle cap. So you have that scaly dermatitis type stuff on a baby's scalp, and go in, the doctor's like, yeah, it's cradle cap. Give the kid a little bit of biotin. That's what they need. This stuff is kind of a crusty yellow or white patches on the scalp. It can be behind the ears and around on the face. In adults, basically the same thing is called seborrheic dermatitis. And that can hit the skin in all kinds of different places. And you've seen this diagnosed in a lot of different places, a lot of different things. And biotin deficiency can also be a cause of dandruff for some people. So a lot of people think that dandruff is just, you know, your scalp is dry, and it may not be. It may not be that it's dry.
It's typically not. I mean, a lot of times we, you know, have found that people who come in complaining of dandruff, we find other problems going on. And, you know, by correcting those problems, those things go away. And dandruff, like, you know, any other skin condition, is something that is generally going to draw people out to say, okay, it's time. I've got to figure out what's going on.
Enough's enough. This is embarrassing, or it's bothering me, or whatever the issue is that they have with it.
And I mean, and I think I brought this up probably last show with biotin. It's rare, but some people do have an issue with biotin that by taking a biotin supplement, it can cause cystic acne. I happen to be one of those people. And it is not, it's certainly not common. Most people are going to take biotin and have absolutely no problem with it. But I just know that from my own personal experience, I wish someone had told me that, because it was extremely frustrating before I finally figured out, you know, was able to connect it back to the biotin that I was taking.
Right. And And for some, it's not that like any amount of biotin creates that problem. For some, it's just a certain amount over a period of time.
Right. Like, and for others, it's any amount.
We know that Erin can take a dose of biotin and be okay. She takes doses of biotin for several days in a row, there's going to be an issue.
Right.
Because, I mean, there's just some things, I mean, we've played around with this enough to just kind of figure it out and be like, oh yeah, okay, yep, that's the limit. So we know. And as that goes for a lot of you out there, trust me, I know with skin stuff, you've trialed and erred everything. By the time you end up in my office, most of you look at me and be like, I've tried everything. And I'm like, okay, I believe you. Have you tried this? We don't have to go through that because they've already done it. But anyway, so biotin deficiency in the diet is really only seen when people are consuming raw egg whites. Like, you know, everybody's seen the person that's trying to be like Rocky and they're consuming raw egg whites. And to me, I can't handle that. It turns my stomach a little bit just thinking about it. But there's a protein in the raw egg white that binds with biotin and stops your body from being able to absorb it in the gut. So if you're someone that's eating a lot of raw eggs, or I guess you're drinking raw eggs at that point, you need to be aware that you could be deficient in biotin. So, you know, tip from Dr. TJ here is don't eat raw eggs.
Right.
call me crazy, but I just say no. As far as food sources of biotin, great places are egg yolks cooked and liver. Those are good animal sources, plant sources, things like Swiss chard, romaine lettuce, almonds, walnuts. Those are good sources of biotin. And then, you know, getting those foods in your diet, oftentimes just getting stuff in your diet, most people don't have to supplement with super high levels of biotin unless you're dealing with, you know, some of these other issues. Most people aren't buying biotin as an individual supplement to take a lot of extra biotin. It's just not necessary, in my experience anyway. That's not one of the things that we have to focus on a lot. So, next on the list, sulfur. And every time I say sulfur, any patient that has an allergy to a sulfa medication says, oh, I can't take sulfur. Sulfa medications and sulfur needed in the body, two completely different things. Yes, you can have sulfur. You are not allergic to sulfur. Sulfa is a class of medications. It is not sulfur. Completely different. Sulfur is actually the third most abundant mineral in the body, and it's extremely important for you to actually live. Very important for skin health, very important for overall wellness. We don't hear a lot about sulfur from mainstream nutrition. It's just not something that's talked about. And a lot, because of that, a lot of people don't even know, like, what foods would I get sulfur from? They just don't know. But unfortunately, a lot of people in the United States, I believe, are probably deficient in sulfur, which, you know, is likely a contributing factor to, you know, disease processes and things like that and stuff going on. The benefits are, there's a lot of benefits. There are supplements that you can take to get sulfur. There are sulfur donors. Things like glutathione is a sulfur donor. Alpha lipoic acid is a sulfur donor. I take alpha lipoic acid every single day. It's another one of the ones that I take every single day. But we got to have sulfur for making collagen. Collagen is what gives our skin structure and strength. It gives us, you know, integrity to our skin. And if we don't have enough of it, we have problems.
Right. And so many people know, I mean, we know collagen is important, but most people don't know that, you know, dietary sulfur significantly affects the production of collagen.
Right. So We've got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to finish up with sulfur and move into silica, another hot topic. You're listening to Wellness 101. Last segment of episode 2 on skin health. And we've been going through talking about different nutrients, why they're important for skin health. And before the break, we were talking about sulfur. And you know, not to be consumed or confused with sulfa drugs. Sulfur is very important for collagen synthesis. So for us to be able to make collagen, which is a very, very important piece of our skin health and component for skin health, there's some studies out there that look at animals and animals fed diets that are deficient in sulfur actually produce less collagen than they normally would if they had adequate levels of sulfur. Sulfur's definitely required for our body to be able to make glutathione. Glutathione is our master antioxidant, and it is extremely important for helping us get rid of free radicals and help heal the damage from free radicals. We've got to make it for that. Glutathione is used for like cellular anti-aging. It's very anti-aging in its properties. Glutathione is one of those things we use a lot of. We use a lot of that at the clinic as well. High levels of glutathione help slow down visible signs of aging. It's just kind of what they do. So where do you consume foods that are high in sulfur? Like I said a second ago or right before the break, you know, a lot of people in this country are consuming diets that really don't have enough sulfur in them, mainly because of the food that sulfur is in. It's in things like garlic, onion, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, and kale. And those are just not, unfortunately, they're not vegetables that we consume massive amounts of in this country, unfortunately, which is why.
Although kale has grown tremendously.
Yeah, kale has increased production and consumption way more than probably the rest of them.
Are they things you have to eat raw again? Is that why?
Probably so.
Because I eat a lot of garlic and a lot of onions.
But they're cooked into things. Actually, right. onion is actually the world's most number one consumed food.
Okay.
But
it gets cooked
and
everything.
It's cooked, and so you lose all this stuff. That's exactly right.
That's what
right.
I wanted to clear up. Because I was like, well, I eat a lot of onions.
Right. Yeah.
But they're always cooked.
They're always cooked.
And cooked for sulfur is not as important as with vitamin C.
It's not as important for vitamin C. You're still going to get some sulfur.
Yeah.
So people that are...
It doesn't completely destroy it.
Yes. It's not as important, but still, you know, if you cook it for long periods of time, especially if like you add onion to soup and you cook that soup for a day, you're
losing a lot of it.
You're losing a lot
and
of
so,
it. You're
yeah.
degrading some nutrition there. But another thing that's interesting is fermentation. So if you ferment foods, it may be making the sulfur a little more bioavailable. So things like sauerkraut may have more bioavailable sulfur than other foods. So found that very interesting. So that's kind of enough about sulfur. Silica. So this is another one. This is a lot of people I don't think even talk about or think about silica. I think most people, you ask them about silica and they're like, yeah, so those little silica packets that are in the electronics that
right.
I buy or in there to absorb water. That's basically what they're doing, is they're absorbing moisture. And, you know, it may not be, you know, an essential nutrient by current standards. It's still important for overall health. We gotta have this stuff. If you don't have enough silica, if animal studies out there that don't have enough silica, they don't make connective tissue very well. It's very poorly formed, and that can be very problematic.
Right, and that includes collagen. So
yeah, it includes collagen. Did I leave that part out? I meant to say that. So what's really interesting is silica can even contribute to certain enzyme activities that we have to have for normal collagen formation. So if we have to have these enzymes to make collagen and they require some silica and we don't have enough silica going on in our diets, well, then we're not going to have an enzyme that's functioning at its best. So we're not going to be able to do, you know, that enzyme's not going to be able to do its job. And therefore, we're going to struggle with collagen production and formation. So they help with making silica. It helps with making this stuff called glycosaminoglycans or GAGs. These things are kind of like structural building blocks. I don't really know how to explain them other than that. We could get in on, you know, do a whole show on glycosaminoglycans. But one of them that you may have heard of that's important for skin health is hyaluronic acid. It helps our skin cells proliferate, which means it helps them to grow, heal, you know, and split and divide. And it increases the retinoic acid, which is that vitamin A stuff, which and then helps our hydration of our skin. So our skin is just overall healthier when we get enough silica. Now, if we don't get enough silica, our skin becomes much less elastic. And so we have, you know, we may have saggier skin. We won't be able to heal and repair wounds nearly as well either. So we'll have impaired wound healing. No one wants impaired wound healing. That's just, I mean, we've got to be able to heal ourselves. We got to have enough collagen formation. We got to have this stuff right if we're going to maintain this tight, healthy, wrinkle-free skin that we all want to have.
Right, which is why silica is known for, you know, slowing down the signs of aging. That's one of the reasons why we specifically included it in our list, is because we know that it's something that, first of all, is not generally talked about or, you know, thought of when you think of nutrients to add.
Right.
But also it's so important for collagen formation.
But what's funny is if you get into some of these like spas and things like that, where they're really big into anti-aging and stuff like that, if you look at the water that they provide for their clients, it's oftentimes Fiji water. And, you know, Fiji water, everyone knows what Fiji water is. It's the square bottles, really cool stuff. That stuff has four times the levels of silica compared to other bottled waters. And that's due to the fact that it's getting that silica coming from volcanic rock that stuff runs through. I just find that very interesting that, you know, even there's some people out there that understand it, obviously, because they're making sure that you have, you know, plenty of silica in facilities where their main job is to, you know, help you feel and look younger. Very anti-aging.
Right. But so, in addition to water, we do have other food sources of silica. Leeks, green beans, garbanzo beans is a good one. Strawberries.
Those are also chickpeas for people who don't know what garbanzo beans are. It's chickpeas.
Cucumber, mango, celery, asparagus, and rhubarb all have silica in it.
Rhubarb. I haven't thought about rhubarb. My grandma used to make rhubarb pie when I was little. I haven't even thought about that since then. Wow. So there are places that we can get this stuff. Those are not foods that are foreign to most of us in the United States, at least. And a lot of us eat several of these types of foods, as well as, you know, when you're out and got to buy a bottle of water, maybe you want to pick up a bottle of Fiji water. Maybe they'll send us a case for mentioning them on our show.
I was going to say, we don't kind of promoting them.
A little shout out to Fiji water. Go ahead and send us the Institute of Natural Health, please. Send us a few cases of your delicious nectar. So that's about all the time that we've got for today. Next week when we get back together, we're going to finish this up. We're going to be talking about things like niacin and vitamin K2, Vitamin E is another one that we're going to talk about. So very exciting. We'll wrap that up. In the meantime, if you have questions or comments, feel free to email us or call us at 314-293-8123. Follow us online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. We're out there posting all the time. We love to hear from you. So for Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. This has been Wellness 101. Thanks for listening.